Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 339 for October 16th, 2011. Support for Whiskey Cask comes from Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey. Find out more at redbreastwhiskey.com. Coming up in a few minutes...
What's lovely about the whiskey trade is that you can say horrible things about whiskeys, but people still want to buy them. Because it makes them more quirky and more individual.
That's Antonia Bruce of Adelphi on just one of the things that makes Adelphi's independent bottlings unique. I'll have more with Antonia later on, along with the calendar of events, the comments of the week, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department. First off, let's look at the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Let's start off with some auction news. Bonhams held its latest whiskey auction last Wednesday in Edinburgh, and a bottle of the Glenlivet distilled back in 1883 and bottled in 1931 led the bidding. The hammer price was £18,750, or just under $30,000. That was followed closely by a 50-year-old Macallan from 1928 that went for £16,875. In the four-digit range, two Macallans, one from 1938 and one from 1948, went for £3,500 each, and a bottle of Glenlivet Prime Minister's Reserve went for £3,000. There was one American whiskey of note in the auction, a 1911 vintage bottle of Old Overholt Rye, sold for £275. An auction of a different sort now. The Distilled Spirits Council of the U.S. held its annual Spirit of Mount Vernon Heritage Dinner and Charity Auction at Mount Vernon this week. The event raised $214,000 for education programs at Mount Vernon, including $12,000 from the sales of the first two bottles of aged George Washington's rye whiskey, distilled 2 years ago at Mount Vernon. The remaining 300 bottles go on sale this coming Saturday, the 22nd, at Mount Vernon for $185 each. Last time around, I reported that Suntory will start selling its Hakushu 12-year-old single malt in the U.S. The official announcement came this week in New York City, and Suntory's Mike Miyamoto told me why it takes so long for Suntory to bring its whiskeys to America.
We are kind of prudent to bring the new product to this country because we were too early. Maybe 30, 40 years ago, we exported a lot of Suntory whiskeys overseas, but those days and Japan wasn't recognized to make that sort of a product, so that it was disastrous. So we just lost the confidence, with those incidents, so that we are really prudent to introduce a new product to the new market. And then, last a couple of years, maybe 4 or 5 years, we saw the growth of Yamazaki, and also introduced in Hibiki, the blended whiskey, 12 years old here as well, and seems to doing well. So now we feel slightly more confident that the Hakushu could be, well accepted it again. So that's why we just decided to introduce Hakushu this time.
And tell us about the distillery itself. It's located up in the mountains in a bit of a different location than Yamazaki, correct?
Yes, entirely different from Yamazaki. Hakushu is located amongst the forest and the mountains, and it's a beautiful area. National Park is nearby, so there are lots of tourists coming by, too.
And the whiskey is different as well, correct?
Yes. As you know, that the whiskey has to be matured in the cask for a long, long time. So the ambience and microclimate surrounding the distillery plays an important role. And you see that, the climate of Hakushu and also the environment of Hakushu is very sort of, high mountain type. And there are lots of trees and flowers blossoming in the spring. and also green leaves in the summertime. That sort of flavor bouquet actually sucked into the casks because cask breathes. And so over those years, you know, whiskey suck up and a lot of nice flavor from the surroundings. And that's why the Hakushu gives a very refreshing taste compared to Yamazaki.
Will we see more expressions from Hakushu eventually, or will it just be the 12-year-old in the United States?
As I said, and we are prudent that instead of just introducing a lot of new product, we'd like to see how Hakushu 12 years goes. Then, if it goes well, then we may decide to bring maybe 18 years old. But we haven't decided that yet.
Now, I understand it's also available in, I think, a 10-year-old and up to a 25-year-old in other markets, correct?
Well, 10 years old is maybe kind of, fading out because 10 and 12 are too close. We have usually 12 and 18 and 25. Yes, you're correct.
While I've got you on the phone, the last time you and I spoke, we were talking about problems with the supply of Yamazaki 12 around the world. Is that getting better now that you're getting closer to the end of the year because of some intermediate supply problems a few years ago?
Well, you see that we can't go back to 12 years ago, and we're still confronting with the problem of shortage of whiskey. But we have other product which use the Yamazaki malt, thanks to the blenders came up with the new recipe for other products, so that other product may not need and much more Yamazaki whiskey in it, so that Yamazaki single malt can be more available. But still, we face the crisis of the shortage of whiskey yet.
It'll
maybe
be
another,
what?
Another
a little bit longer?
Another 2-3 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which blends did you have to change? I'm assuming it was some of the Hibiki whiskeys?
No, not Hibiki. Those economical and standard type of whiskey, which is widely available in Japan.
But not the export market?
No, not the export market.
Anything new coming along that we need to know about as far as the Yamazaki range is concerned? I know you have a lot of single cask bottlings in that one, too.
Well, as far as...
That go out around the world.
Yeah, but in time to time, we launched the limited edition of Yamazaki and Hakushu single malt. But, we are not really planning to export those and outside of Japan yet. But, occasionally, you may see some from Japan. We have launched a single cask series of Yamazaki this year. First of all, bourbon and the punchon, then sherry, and then Mizunara yet to come towards the end of the year. But we don't know if we are going to ship them outside of Japan yet.
Which means that we'll just have to come to Japan, right?
Well, that's the easiest way to get it.
I'll have tasting notes for the Hakushu 12-year-old on an upcoming episode of Whiskey Cast. In the last episode, we heard from Johnny Walker master blender Jim Beveridge, and while some listeners might have raised an eyebrow at my referring to Johnny Walker as an iconic brand, we have new evidence of that this week. The International Wine and Spirits Report tracks sales of spirits brands worldwide, and there are 4 whiskey brands in the 11 on its 2011 Elite Brands list. To make that list, a brand has to sell more than 1 million cases worldwide, with at least 40% of sales outside its main market, and maintain an annual growth rate of 5% for 5 consecutive years. Johnny Walker reclaimed the top spot on that list for 2011. Jameson is up a spot to 4th place. Bacardi's William Lawson's blended scotch fell a spot to 9th place, and Diageo's Buchanan's blended scotch fell 2 places to 11th. By the way, the other brands on that list, Jägermeister was 2nd, followed by Havana Club Rum in 3rd. 4 vodkas fill 5th through 8th positions, Finlandia, Sobieski, Russian Standard, and Aristov, and Barcelo Rum is in 10th place. South Africa's James Sedgwick Distillery is marking its 125th anniversary and is releasing the second in its series of commemorative Three Ships 10-year-old single malts, honoring explorers linked to the Cape of Good Hope. This year's release honors Vasco da Gama, who was the first European explorer to reach India via the Cape back in 1497. Last year's initial release marked the journey of Portugal's Bartolomeu Dias, who was the first sailor in modern times to round the Cape in 1488 and gave it its original name, Cape of Tempests. Next year's final release in this series will honor Jan van Riebeck, who led a fleet of three ships to what is now Cape Town in 1652. Finally, I mentioned last month that the Old Pulteney Row to the Pole expedition reached its goal of being the first explorers to row to the magnetic North Pole. There's a commemorative bottling being released to celebrate the accomplishment. Distillery manager Malcolm Waring selected some American and Spanish oak sherry casks for the bottling. 3,375 milliliter bottles will be available worldwide. And that's the news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. Unnecessarily well made. Just a quick note, I've extended the deadline until the end of October for our Bal Blair special in the Exhibition Prints Gallery on the website. There are three Bal Blair photos available in the gallery, and for each one sold during October, I'll donate $25 to the class trip fund at the Edgerton Primary School in Bal Blair's hometown of Edgerton. Let's check out the comments of the week now, brought to you by Johnny Walker. Got a great email from a new listener this week. Tony Dutcher wrote this short note from Cedar Falls, Iowa. As a home brewer, vintner, and distiller for 3 years, I am so pleased to find your podcast and cannot wait to go through all the archives. I'll have loads of questions for you soon. Tony, thank you for the note and send those questions along. If I can't answer them, I'll find someone who can. Our buddy Matt Waller sent along his comments on being in the audience for the Laphroaig Live webcast last week. He was there along with some members of his Distant Thunder Whiskey Club. Here's just part of his note. Club members also attended, as did my wife, and to my horror, she was sampling and liking Laphroaig a little too much, so now I am going to have to keep my stash well hidden. Of course, Matt's wife has a blog of her own, as we heard about earlier this year. It's the Married to the Whiskey Club blog. From the Facebook page, Miguel Angel Blanchlarden posted a note on my comment about the Hakushu 12 release. It is a great dram. I prefer it over the 18-year-old. Really peaty and solid. Thanks, Miguel. Finally, I'd like to thank our listeners in Sweden who translated the article on WhiskeyCast in the latest issue of Altom Whiskey. Since I don't speak a word of Swedish, I just wanted to make sure I didn't say anything stupid. Also, there's a profile on WhiskeyCast in the latest issue of the Dutch whiskey magazine, Whiskey Passion. According to Bas van den Groep, I apparently didn't say anything dumb in that interview either. Of course, I'm kidding, but if you catch me saying something dumb, or have a question, suggestion, or something you'd like to add to our global conversation, post it on our Facebook page or just email me. My address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And the comments of the week are brought to you by Johnny Walker. On the web at johnnywalker.com, click the banner at the WhiskeyCast website and become a Whiskey Insider today. Time now for the calendar of events brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. The Balvenie Roadshow stops at New York City's Brandy Library this coming Tuesday night. Bonhams will hold its next auction of rare whiskeys in New York City this time around on Thursday. Whiskey Live Los Angeles is Friday night. You can get a 25% discount still on tickets. Use the discount code CASK at WhiskeyLive.com, and that code is also good for tickets to Whiskey Live Toronto on November 4th. The Great American Distillers Festival is this coming weekend in Portland, Oregon, along with the Wild Whiskey Weekend in Nykøbing Falster, Denmark, and Mega Vino and Mega Spirits in Brussels. The City Club in San Francisco will host a Scotch tasting on October 24th. Federal Wine and Spirits in Boston will host Jim McEwen of Brooklady for tastings and a master class on the 28th. Indy's Whiskey and Fine Spirits Expo is that same night in Indianapolis. Whiskey Fest New York is November 1st, and Whiskey Live Cape Town is November 2nd through the 4th in South Africa. There's a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Become a friend of Laphroaig. Claim your own square foot of Isla.
Whiskey Cast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Tim Brennan, retired engineering supervisor, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
I've worked with Irish distillers for 40 years. I was born in Middleton and went to school in Middleton and then joined a company in 1971. Traditions in the old distillery were if you were involved in a very dirty job, you then got a half glass of Redbreast. They were the perks in the old distillery. We had one guy there who was particularly fond of his glass of Redbreast. And in order to go to the manager of the warehouse, he would get a really dirty bag of dust and he'd shake it over himself so that he looked so dirty. And he would head off over to the manager and say, "Mr. Daly, here I am. I've had a terrible dirty job for the morning. Look at the cut of me. Any chance of getting a half one?" And he'd duly get his half one, come back, change his clothes, and he was fine again.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
Time now for Whiskey Cast In Depth. Last month, while I was in Glasgow, I had the chance to spend an evening tasting Adelphi's bottlings with the members of Glasgow's Whiskey Club. The evening featured many of this fall's new releases from Adelphi, and I spent a few minutes talking about them and the company with Antonia Bruce.
Well, there was an Adelphi distillery in Adelphi Street in the Gobles, which was also known as the Loch Katrine Distillery, and it was owned by someone called Archibald Walker, mainly, and then sold to DCL. And in 1906, there was what's known as the Great Adelphi Disaster, or the Great Gobles Disaster, in which one of the washbacks, the legs, collapsed. And when it fell down, it brought down a few of the others. And so a very large volume of warm, what would have been warm beer at the time, because it hadn't gone through the distillation, swept out through the door like a tsunami of beer and scooshed down Adelphi Street up to the second floor windows, second floor height, and taking with it a few horses and a very unfortunate gentleman who was stepping out of the pub at the time and went to a sort of sticky end, but probably had a happy death. But so that was really the end of the Adelphi Distillery as we know it. It kind of limped on for a few years, and in the 70s it was knocked down completely. I think there's a little bit maybe remaining. I haven't actually been to see it, but now there's a mosque in its place.
That's unusual, but it was revived by the descendants of Mr. Walker, right?
Well, the name was kept on by Jamie Walker, who is the descendant of the great-great-grandson, I think, of Archibald Walker. And he bought selected casks and did his own bottling in a small street in Edinburgh. And really it's gone on from there. And the present owners live in Ardnamurchan, on the Ardnamurchan Peninsula, which reaches the westernmost point of the mainland of the UK. And which is why some of the names of some of our blended, well, our vatted single malts come from that region. So there's Liddesdale, Faskerdale, all those names are from the Ardnamurchan Peninsula, which is where Glenborrowdale Castle is as well, which is the centre of activity, of Adelphi activity, and where we're just about to have our importers gathering.
I know there is hope at some point that you might be able to revive the Adelphi Distillery at some point. How close are you to being able to realise that dream?
Well, hopefully, plans are in the air as we speak, and we'd very much love there to be an Adelphi Distillery again one day so that we can actually make our own whiskey as well. But I can't really say more than that because things are looking hopeful that way.
Tell me about the philosophy that you and Alex and everyone at Adelphi uses when you're selecting single casks for bottling.
Well, we're probably what would be described as extremely fussy, to put it politely. But Alex is the one who chooses all the casks, and he would probably choose about 4% of what he's offered, so rejecting 96%, if my math is correct. And when he's done that, we then take our choice to Charlie McLean, who's our great guru, and he will help us to kind of do the final selection, bring it down, maybe reject a couple more. And then he also helps us with the tasting notes at the end, which is lovely, which is my favourite time, is doing the tasting notes. It's a great laugh, and I learned a lot from Charlie and his huge experience of whiskey. So,
what's your favourite tasting note from Charlie over the years?
Possibly one, I can't remember which of the Islay whiskies it was, which was described as reminding him of a dead seagull or plastic detritus washed up on the on the beach, but which goes really to show. I used to work in the wine trade, and what's lovely about the whiskey trade is that you can say horrible things about whiskies, but people still want to buy them because it makes them more quirky and more individual. And that's really what we try and sort of do with Adelphi, is that every cask is different. So, and we like to kind of find, you know, exceptional casks. So a funny tasting note can only enhance the whiskey, really.
And you've taken also not just single cask bottlings, but multiple casks from the same distillery and vatted them together, right?
Yes. So we have a range. We mostly do single cask whiskey, but we occasionally have, in order to bring it to a wider market, we have a range which with names which end in Dale. And they, for instance, we have a Speyside where we've bottled a certain distillery. 10 casks from a certain distillery, and that's called Loudill. And then there's one from the islands, which is known as Faskadale. We've just run out of that, in fact. And we have also had a 5 hogshead Isla vatting, which is known as Liddesdale. So they won't necessarily always be from the same distilleries, but we'll try and keep for each one, keep the kind of spirit of each one the same. So an island, a Speyside, a Highland, etc.
What will you be releasing between now and, say, the end of the year?
Well, at the moment we have... tonight we've just tasted a Lochside, which is... So that was a single blend, which is quite unusual, with Joseph Hobbs, who was the distiller at Ben Nevis. So that's quite an old one. That's from 1965, and that's quite rare. And what else do we taste tonight? A Breath of Isla from a distillery which cannot be named. But which lots of people tried to guess. It's quite a smoky one, and it's one of my favourites, but I'm a smoker, so so I'm quite partial to smoky whiskies. We also have, I'm not sure, we have to wait for about 2 weeks. I think we have, my mind's gone blank, but that's possibly because I've been tasting too many Adelphi whiskies tonight.
But let's talk about that Lochside for a second, because a lot of folks aren't used to the concept of a single blend. Let's explain that one, because it is a very unusual whiskey in its own right, right?
Well, that's really thanks to Joseph Hobbs, who's an extraordinary person, and had a lot to do with exporting whiskey during the Prohibition, which he did from Campbelltown, I think, because it was the nearest point to America from Scotland. And a lot of kind of became quite rich during that period, we won't say any more. But he was very clever, and anyway, he had the idea of having two stills, so the coffee still and the pot still in the same building, and basically making those two whiskies and then blending them and putting them into the cask. So we get this extraordinary mixture of the subtlety of the single malt and then a little bit of sweetness coming from the grain, which, and of course the Lochside was very heavily from a heavily sherried cask, and so it just makes this incredible complex whiskey with all these different things happening, and which opens up, you leave it in the glass and you come back to it and more things happen, which is what we're looking for really in a whiskey, is the complexity and the subtlety, really. It's a great fireside whiskey which you could drink till 3 in the morning if you were up. It's a late night whiskey, definitely.
By the way, I got word this week about a special Adelphi bottling, a 1991 Bunahavan cask bottled just for the whiskey shop in Dufton, Scotland. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with my notes for that 1965 Lochside. It's bottled at 52.3% ABV, and the nose is rich with dried fruits, brown sugar, burnt vanilla, dates, and just a hint of orange peel, very rum-like. The taste is thick, rich, and oily with orange peel and hints of ginger, almonds, and nutmeg underneath. The finish is very long with almonds, brown sugar, and a hint of orange peel. It's an outstanding whiskey. I'm scoring the Lochside 1965 a 95. Antonia mentioned the Adelphi Liddesdale Islay bottlings, and I tried an 18-year-old sherry cask, this one bottled at 46% ABV. The nose is creamy with just a hint of peat, subtle brininess, heather, wet sand, burnt vanilla, and caramel notes. The taste starts off with a caramel cola note at first, then develops a spicy cinnamon kick that lasts and lasts, with hints of dried fruits and brown sugar underneath. The finish is long with subtle fruity notes and a kiss of brown sugar. I'm scoring the Liddesdale 18 and 87. Finally, we heard about the Aberlour 12-year-old non-chill filtered expression during our coverage of Whiskey Live Paris. I brought home a sample. It's bottled at 48% ABV. The nose has almond, fig, Christmas cake, and honey notes with a touch of orange peel. The taste is thick and buttery with great spices, cinnamon on top and honey underneath with some orange peel, and that orange peel touch lasts through the very smooth finish with a hint of black tea. I'm scoring it a 93. You can find all of my tasting notes in the free WhiskeyCast apps for iPhone, iPad, and Android. The Apple version, which works on that new iPhone 4S you might just have heard about, is brought to you by the Glenrothes, and the Android version is brought to you by Benromic. They're also available at the WhiskeyCast website, along with links for our Facebook community page and my Twitter feed, the calendar of events, the photo gallery, and, of course, a complete archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com. And my email address for questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. Support for WhiskeyCast comes from Redbreast Single Pot Still Irish Whiskey. Find out more at RedbreastWhiskey.com and join the Stillhouse to get your own personalized whiskey journal. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2011, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.